Cool. So I'm expecting great stuff from you guys, second service, all right? You should be more awake, plenty of coffee in you, all right? Lots of talk back, okay? I'm ready for it. So I am not Tim Borden. He's got a lot more hair than me and is a lot older than I am. It balances out, okay? But my name is Luke Sashley. Along with my beautiful wife, we are the student pastors here at Genesis Metro Church. We've been here for about 5 years working with all these loud hoodlums over here who we love to death. We love getting to see what God does. It is an honor and privilege to be asked to speak this morning. I know many of you have been praying for Pastor Tim and his family as they all have had the essential plague, type A flu, on and off throughout the week. And so started with Carrie. She was patient zero who tried to infect our entire staff, but most of us survived, all right? So Tim is on the mend. He's doing a lot better, and I know he is grateful for you guys' prayers over him and his family this week. So this morning, I'm honored to get to be with you guys. Hopefully, I don't offend you too much. I don't really care about the offending you part. I'll push at that a little bit. But this morning, just to fill you a little bit in about my family, and I want to catch you up with my family, and I always do because I always use my kids as illustrations. I'm 100% sure that 80% of the reason God gave me kids was because I was a preacher, okay? And I needed constant stories to tell, all right? And so we have two little kids. We have an almost 7-year-old little daughter and a 4-year-old little monster who thinks he's a boy, or a boy who thinks he's a monster. I'm not really sure which one's which yet. And we've been married for going on 11 years. We've moved 5 times into 5 different homes. And so I say all that because 4 of us being in the house, moving, we realize that we collect a lot of stuff. We collect a lot of junk, all right? Let's be honest. Most of it we don't need, but we have a lot of it. And what I've learned over the years is that everything has a place. Anybody understand this yet? Like everything you own, there's a place for it. If there's not, you know what that place is called? The trash can, all right? Get rid of it. Like that's my goal in life. If I can't find a place for it, it's going away, okay? I have 2 kids, so that does not happen, okay? They keep a lot of it, but that's like a goal to shoot for, right? But it's funny because while everything has a place, and I mean everything, because you're like, well, I got all this stuff, just all this junk that accumulates. Where's all your junk go? It all goes in your junk drawer. Everybody have a junk drawer? Anybody have a junk drawer? Hey, it's in church. We can be honest this morning, all right? Anybody have 2? Anybody have a closet? Some of you, it's called a garage, okay? That's just where everything that you don't know where it goes, goes. It's 4 cars. I don't know if you knew that or not. You're supposed to be able to, like, park a car in there, all right? But everything has a place. And what's funny is everybody's particular about where certain things go. Anybody very particular about where stuff goes? Making sure, amen, that's right. It's funny because even if you don't think you are, you are. It may be one thing, okay? I'm not particular about much at all. Except for the dishwasher. I don't know what it is. I had like 5 husbands come up to me afterwards, just amening the heck out of me, okay? There's something about, listen, there is a right and a sinful way to load the dishwasher, okay? I am right, my wife is sinful, okay? That's just how it goes with the dishwasher. But that's like my anal, like I can't, if I see it and it's loaded wrong, I get a little twitchy, like I have to unload it and then reload it. It just is what it is, okay? Don't judge me. You're imperfect too, all right? But we all have our thing. For my wife, hers is our little breakfast bar counter. It's just something about it. I think it's cluttery. She thinks it's perfect, okay? Like that is her space that has to be right. Both of our kids have it too. For our little boy, it's how his animals are on his bed. Like and then for our daughter, she's very funny. She's a little OCD. We're praying for her about that. God will redeem her one day. But she has to have 3 books. I'm not kidding. Not 4. Not 2. 3 books on her bed next to her pillow every night before she goes to bed. And I'm the kind of dad, like, I'm going to start messing with stuff just to have some fun, okay? Add a couple books, take them away, hide them under the pillow, whatever you want to do, right? That's just, we all have our own unique little thing. We all do. And the cool thing about that and the frustrating thing about that is I'm the only one who desires the dishwasher to be put a certain way. My wife is the only one who has a strong desire for the breakfast bar to be set up a certain way. No one but my daughter cares about her 3 books on her bed. No one but my son cares about the way his stuffed animals are arranged so where they like surround his head as if you can't find him in the morning, right? That they have a desire about where things go. because those things are important to them for some reason. The dishwasher is important to me for some reason. How it's loaded and how it's not. And when it's not loaded properly, I want to fix it. I get this desire to make sure it's right. And we've been walking through this idea of alignment over the last couple weeks. Have y'all enjoyed this series so far? It's been incredible. I've told Pastor Tim every week he's got to like hold it back a little bit. He's throwing some hard punches. I don't really like it. But it's been an incredible, incredible series. And the more I think about this idea of alignment, and I kind of walk through this idea in our house where we all have a place for every little thing, I kind of had this realization that even God has a specific place he belongs. You ever realize this? And when it comes to you choosing to try to walk in alignment with God, he has a very particular place he belongs. God's not just a God that you can like try to fit in wherever you want to. There's a place that is rightfully his to possess. You ever realize this? David was a man who realized this. David, through the time that he was first given the promise of becoming king, to the time that he faithfully walked into the valley to defeat Goliath, to the time that he was being chased by his mentor Saul, had opportunities to kill him and take the throne early, but said, no, 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 this is who God has deemed king. I will wait my turn. He understood the importance of being in alignment with God, and he understood the importance that in order to do so, God had to be in his proper place. In 1 Chronicles chapter 13, we find a fun little story. It's very short after David has been made king over Israel. And again, you got to think of the buildup to this, right? And from the time he was a young teenage boy being told, one day you will be king of Israel. I know your family doesn't even know you exist. You're out in the field by yourself, but you will be king. To doing the impossible and defeating Goliath and saving a nation, to then becoming the right-hand man to the king and then being chased as a criminal, and then finally to become to this point where he's anointed king of Israel. But the first thing on his mind is a very important thing. He says this in 1 Chronicles chapter 13, and David said to all the assembly of Israel, if it seems good to you, and from the Lord our God, let us send abroad to our brothers who remain in all the lands of Israel, as well as to the priests and Levites in the cities that have pasture lands, that they might be gathered to us. Verse 3, then, so he says, I'm going to bring everybody together. Then, let us bring again the ark of God to us. For we did not seek it in the days of Saul. All the assembly agreed to do so, for the thing was right in the eyes of the people. I love this. As David is on top of his game, he's just become king of the nation of Israel, God's chosen people. And his first thing is, I need to make God first. I'm going to do whatever I can to bring back the ark, which represents God's presence in front of his people. We're going to make sure this gets where it needs to go. You see, here's the cool thing. As David is walking in alignment, when we choose to go down that path to align our lives, every aspect of it with God, alignment will create a desire to position God in his rightful place. And here's what I mean by that. And here's what I love about this. Again, you got to consider where David's at. David's on top of the mountain, man. He's a young boy just given the position of king of God's people. The second king ever in existence over God's people. He's not suffering. He's not struggling. But yet his priority, the only thing on the forefront of his mind is I need to make sure God's on top. I need to make sure the people can see that God is with us so that they can remember, because we've neglected it during Saul's reign, I want to make sure the people remember why we're here. See, David wasn't foolish. He understood why he was there. He understood how he got there. David's desire was to position God in front of everyone. And I love this, because let's be honest. When's the most often time that we seek after God? Like when do we get to that point most of the time as average Christians that we get desperate enough to say, whatever I'm doing, I'm stopping everything, and I'm going to make sure I bring God back into my life? What are we usually going through?
trouble, turmoil, pain.
It's not usually when we're on top of our game. When we're on top of our game, we're usually pretty tempted to neglect God, to set him to the side. But here's David. He's so aligned with God that this desire is creating in him this passion to make sure that God is put where he rightfully belongs, at the forefront of his people. Number one, the top. David didn't have to be in turmoil to desire that. He had to be in alignment to desire that. He had to understand the importance of God in his people and in his life. You see, for David, it wasn't about increasing his personal prosperity. He was already there. He went from a lowly shepherd boy forgotten by his family. You remember this? When the holy man came to see which of Jesse's sons would be king, they didn't even call him inside. They left him out in the middle of nowhere. And Jesse said, "It's none of them. Do you have anyone else?" He's like, "Well, I got David." And they bring him in. Jesse says, "This is him. Anoints him." And then he waits through this process. He's on top. Church, yeah, what's his pursuit? To make sure God is on top. He knows it's not about what he's done. He knows it's not about what he's able to do. It's about putting God where he belongs. As we talk about alignment this morning, you've got to consider a couple questions. One, where have you positioned God in your life? Where does God sit in your life this morning? Is he hidden in another city away from the temple like he has been for 20 years? Forgotten about? Saul only attempted to bring the ark back to the kingdom one time in his reign. Is God pushed away and forgotten? Or do you have a desire to make him and to place him where he rightfully belongs? Why have you placed him there? You see, we get very worried about the position of things. We get very worried about making sure the proper amount of money is in this account and not this account. We get very concerned about making sure the dishes are arranged properly in our dishwasher. We get very concerned making sure that the trash is put away on the right day on the curb so we don't get a notice from our HOA. But how concerned are we about where God is in our life? How concerned are we about where we've positioned God in our life? When we align ourselves with God, it will create a desire in us to position God where he rightfully belongs. David had the desire. He put together the plan. And then this is what happens. In verse 6, it says that David and all of Israel went to go fetch the ark. And it says in verse 7, they carried the ark of God on a new cart from the house of Abinadab and Uzzah and I'm going to say Ohio just because it's easier. Uzzah and Ohio were driving the cart, and David and all Israel were rejoicing before God with all their might. It sounds like a great day. You think the worship earlier was incredible. This is a nation of people bringing God back to where he belongs with the people, rejoicing and worshiping and praising. They've got him on a fancy new cart. They're ready to go. Then something happens. The cart buckles. The ark begins to fall over. And Uzzah reaches out his hand to stop the ark, and he touches it. It says, the anger of the Lord grew against Uzzah, and God struck him dead. Like, that's a damper on a day, right? Like, everything was going great, and then crazy Uncle Joe got drunk and started insulting everybody, right? Like, it's a messed up moment for these people, and they don't know what's happening. It says that David grew angry with God because God's wrath came down on Uzzah. And he said, I can't do this. I can't bring that into my kingdom. So somebody else needs to hold it. So Obed-Edom, a descendant of the Levite priest, says, I'll take it. Places it in his home.
for 3 months. And for those 3 months, God's blessings never stopped pouring down on Obed-Edom's home. You see, when they decided to bring the ark back, they had the desire, but their actions didn't quite measure up the same. You say, but how? You see, man, I love this about the Bible. I've read this story countless times from the time I was a kid in church. There's one word I never noticed before. It says, and they carried the ark of God on a new cart. There were two rules when it came to carrying and transporting the ark of God that God commanded. One, it must always be carried on the shoulders of the priest. Two, it cannot be touched. In fact, how God designed the cart was so that it would have these rails down the side, which it says in Exodus, shall never be removed, so that it can always be carried properly on the shoulders of the Levitical priest, and it shall not be touched. Two rules, two boundaries, two things that they needed to obey when it came to moving the ark, and they didn't either. Every day, we face choices. Every one of our choices fall in two categories. One, either we respond in obedience or we respond through convenience. Think about it. Think about it. No matter if you are a child, a woman, a man, a teenager, whatever, everything you will face, you have two choices. One, you respond through obedience, basing your actions off what God has called, what He has deemed right. It's difficult at times, but it's always correct. And it's always rewarding. Or we do things based on convenience. Convenience is based on what we know to be easy. The quickest way to do it. The way that we see most people do it. You see, I'm willing to bet that David and them didn't really remember the proper way to transport it. But you know who they saw transport it? The Philistines. And they transported it on a cart. So they did what seemed easy, what seemed quick, what was familiar, instead of seeking what was obedient. You see, when it comes to aligning ourselves with God, alignment always chooses obedience over convenience. Always. In every decision, in every aspect of your life, alignment always chooses obedience over convenience. And let me explain it a little more. You see, David's desire to put God first was good. But his obedience did not measure up to the desire. The desire was good. I mean, even Uzzah, right? His desire was to stop the ark from falling. Listen, we got to be careful. Because it's easy to look at this and say, man, those are small things, right? Parents, it's easy to look at things your children do and say, oh, but that's a small thing, right? Like our children, they're kind of funny. They're very routine-based, and same thing every day. They get home from school, they get out of the car in the parking garage, because we park in our garage. That's just because I have all the junk on the side walls, okay, and in the attics. But we park in the garage, they get out of the car, and then they walk through the laundry room / mud room. They walk past the coat rack, past the little shoe cubbies. They walk through the dining room where we put our homework and backpacks. Then they go through the living room. I don't know why they don't go through the kitchen. They always go the long way. I don't know. And they go through the living room, and then they end up either in their rooms or in the playroom upstairs. But every day, I never figure this out. It's like they think they're Hansel and Gretel and want to find their way home. And parents, you know what I mean. As soon as they walk into that room, they just start dropping little breadcrumbs of all their stuff. It's like they're not going to be able to find their way back to the garage later. So, I'm not going to hang up my jacket. I'm going to drop it on the floor. I'm not going to put my shoe in the shoe cubby. I'm going to set it on the floor. And then I'm going to set a sock by the kitchen table, a folder here. Reagan might take off his shirt and lay it there. I don't really understand it, okay? He's a little boy. But you never know what you're going to find. And every day it's the same question. Is that where that goes?
Is that where that goes? Does that belong there? And you know what they say? No. You see, they know. It's not about knowledge. It's about the fact that convenience overtook obedience. It was easier to just drop it on the floor. It's easier to just throw the sock on the kitchen floor. They know it doesn't belong there. They're not dumb. They get it. But it's convenient. If we want to be in alignment with God, obedience must always overtake convenience. Listen to me. We must be very careful never to downgrade disobedience because of convenience. Like the second you start saying to yourself, well, it's just a small thing, you're on a dangerous path. Everything starts with a small thing. Affairs start with a small thing. Just a conversation. Just a look. Bankruptcy starts with a small thing. Getting fired with your job starts usually with a small thing. Not disciplining your kids starts by ignoring the small things. Because don't get it wrong. I don't care how old your kid is, that's a sinful little creature. And they come into the world testing the waters, trying to find out how far they can go before they get disciplined. Don't overlook the small thing. How many times have we ever seen the small thing become a critical thing? I assure you, based on Scripture, it says, if you spare the rod, you hate your child. Because discipline is important. Don't downgrade disobedience just because something else is convenient. Because whatever you think you're going to lose by going the extra mile that obedience takes, whatever you think you're going to sacrifice or give up, I promise you, it will be overshadowed by the blessings God gives you in return. Whatever you think you're going to sacrifice or give up, you won't even remember it. Because you'll be drowning in what God has for you. But don't make the mistake. You've got to understand that convenience can be tempting if we don't look past today. Because the reality is this, what is convenient today will cost you tomorrow. It will. What's convenient today will cost you tomorrow. Think about it. Anybody ever run out of gas before? Don't be embarrassed. Now let's be real honest. Was the fuel gauge broke? No. You tried to push the limits because it was more convenient for you to just keep on going than to stop and spend the $10 in the 10 minutes to put a little bit of gas in your car. I remember the first time I ran out of gas. I was 22. I made it that far, Mom. I'd just gotten a brand new 1995 Chevy Cavalier. And when I say brand new, it was 2009. I was driving to work and I was running late and I knew I needed gas. I'm not dumb. I was like, I'm running late. It's just, you know, I need to go. On the way home that night, what should have been a 10-minute problem to do what I know needed to be done cost me 2 hours. Breaking down in the middle of nowhere, Odessa, Texas, trying to get a hold of somebody to come help me out. Because ain't nobody around there going to help you out. It took me so much more time. What I could have just fixed in that moment cost me later on. When you pick convenience over obedience, it will cost you tomorrow. Well, I want to be healthy. It's just not convenient. I don't want to do it today. It's more convenient just to grab the fast food. It's more convenient to just say no and to not get up early and go to the gym. I don't have time. Down the road, it'll cost you. I want to be healthy with our finances. But it's not the right time. I need that, so I'll just charge it. It'll cost you down the road.
Think about it, church. Look at Scripture on a greater scale. David lost a good man. A man who had been helping take care of the ark, who was transporting the ark, but because they chose convenience over obedience, it cost them his life. Consider Moses in the desert. In the middle of frustration with the disobedient nation, God said, "Don't strike the rock. I'll provide. Don't strike the rock." But it was more convenient to strike the rock. And it cost him God's promise. Now, he could see the promise. I love that part of the story. God took him up to the hill and said, "Hey, there it is. But you can't go. You can't go. Because you chose convenience over obedience." Consider Ananias and Sapphira. Say, who are they? Just Google it. Go read the story. Promised to give what was rightfully God's to God. And they lied and withheld so that they could just have a little more. And much like Uzzah, God's anger fell on him and struck him dead in the moment. Lot's wife could not turn back because it was more convenient to go to what she knew than what God was leading her to. And God struck her into a pillar of salt. Listen, think about it. How many parents do you know who have chosen convenience over obedience? And because of that, their kids are paying now. They're paying because they wouldn't discipline them when they were young, because they were too distracted to spend time with them. How many marriages are suffering or have ended in divorce because it was more convenient to finish that project at work than to go home and take your wife on a date? It was more convenient to stay up answering emails than to sit down and have a conversation with your spouse. Because it was more convenient. You just keep saying, when it slows down, it's just a season. When it slows down, we'll go on that trip. When it slows down, we'll go on a date again. I tell you what, when you figure out when the slow season is, let me know. Because I've been looking for it for 11 years and I ain't found it. It's more convenient to just ignore it. How many employees, how many bosses have made the mistakes? How many families have faltered because they refuse to give? They refuse to get involved in community. And they find themselves isolated and alone and separated. At what cost is convenience worth it? It's not, I promise you. It's never worth the cost of convenience. Don't allow it to make you pay unnecessary cost. Failing marriages is not worth the convenience of ignoring the moment and just being absorbed with everything else, of having kids flounder in the world because you never spent the time with them or took the moment to discipline them is not worth the cost. Finding yourself isolated and separated from God and His community is not worth the convenience of just staying at home because you're tired. It's not worth the cost. Church, what are you on the verge of losing this morning? Because you keep picking convenience over obedience. You also got to remember, too, that when we choose convenience, it changes the outcome God had planned. I assure you, God's desire was not to strike down Uzzah. But they chose convenience. And the plan changed. Uzzah died. David got angry. He left the ark short of completing the journey. And Obed-Edom received the blessings David was likely to have received. Not just for himself, but for his people. After some time, thankfully, David finally understood. He saw what happened. It's like he decided to go back and figure it out and study. And I can't help but believe that part of what pushed him to do that was he saw the blessings that Obed-Edom was receiving. And it wasn't jealousy, it was urgency. Because he saw it and said, that's why I wanted to bring it in. Because I want my people to experience that. It's not about him and his prosperity. He cared about the people. So he went to figure out what was wrong. And it says in chapter 15, verse 13, it says, because you did not carry it the first time, the Lord our God broke out against us. Because we did not seek him according to the rule. So the priests and the Levites consecrated themselves to bring up the ark of the Lord, the God of Israel, and the Levites carried the ark of God on their shoulders with the poles, as Moses had commanded according to the word of the Lord. Here's what I love. David had to realize it wasn't God's fault he was out of alignment. It wasn't God's fault that Uzzah died. It wasn't. We have to start taking recognition and understanding that when we are out of alignment with God, it's on us. It's not God's doing. It wasn't God's fault. When something unexpected happens, our tendency is to stop and be angry with God about our alignment issues, about our financial issues, about our struggling marriage. When we choose convenience over obedience, it changes the outcome that God desires. It creates an alignment issue. Man, I tell you, don't make the mistake of choosing convenience and only getting to see God's blessing. Think about that. David chose convenience over obedience, and he stood there and watched God's blessings instead of experiencing them. You don't have to sit and watch healthy marriages. You can have one. You don't have to sit and watch people with a healthy finance. It's not about being rich. It's about not drowning. It's not about watching people walk faithfully with the Lord. You can have it too. God is a gracious Father just waiting to pour down a flood of blessing and favor in your life. But he can't when you stop short. Because when you stop short, you remove yourself from the reach of his blessing. And you find yourself witnessing it instead of experiencing it. Understand this. You have to choose obedience. Alignment is not accidental. Think about this. I've been preaching for 11 years, and whether it's adults or students, I find the same just painful problem. We seem to think that our relationship with God is the exception to every rule we know. Think about it. If you walk up to anybody, just go pick somebody tomorrow and say, let me paint a picture. Let's say that I get in a relationship with someone and I never speak to them again. What do you think is going to happen to that relationship? You know what they're going to say? They say it's going to fade, it's going to struggle, it's going to even die. But how come we think that our relationship with Jesus is the exception to the rule? That we can say yes, back away for 20 years, leaving him out of sight and mind, and expect it to be okay? How come when we know if we want to lose 100 pounds, we have to be intentional about it? You don't accidentally lose 100 pounds. You don't accidentally get out of debt. You don't accidentally save your marriage. You don't accidentally show your kids what the love of a father and mother looks like. So why do you think being in alignment with God would be an accident? Alignment is intentional. not accidental. We try to teach our kids this all the time. They do something they're not supposed to do. We walk up, why'd you do that? I don't know, it was an accident.
Liar! You know it's not. You sit on a throne of lies, and we're going to get to it. They know. They know.
Like, you're right. It's not accidental. It's intentional. It's a choice you choose every day as to whether or not you will pursue alignment with God. The ark had been ignored for 20 years. David, in the height of prosperity in his life, said, I'm going to stop everything and make sure that that comes where it belongs so that my people can see it, so that they can remember what God's done for us and put him where he properly belongs. David decided to bring it back. And after Uzzah's death, David had to fight the fear in order to finish the journey. He had to recognize it was his fault, not God's. It was his doing. And so he had to choose differently. Here's the thing, because walking in alignment with God is always an intentional choice, something we make daily. And a lot of times we wake up thinking that the choice won't be worth the cost. Because alignment is mandatory that it involves sacrifice. You will give up things that don't belong in your life. But here's the thing. We get so worried about what we're going to give up and what we think we're going to sacrifice that we don't realize what we will gain is far more worth it. That's not my promise. It's Jesus's. Matthew chapter 24, I think, 16, I'm way off, Samsonite. Matthew chapter 16, verse 24, the Lord told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. I think it's in Mark that it says, we'll take up his cross daily. I love the emphasis on that because it's a daily choice to choose obedience over convenience. Just because you don't feel like it in the morning doesn't make it okay. You have to daily, and here's the cool thing about that. You have a bad day, wake up the next day and choose differently. The hard part is every day you have to choose. But don't worry about what you give up. He says, for whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Verse 26, for what will it profit a man if he gains the world but forfeits his soul? He says, what's the price of your soul? And he ends with this promise. For the Son of Man is going to come. Not maybe. Not if. He's going to come. With his angels in the glory of his Father. And then he will repay each person according to what he has done. When you choose the sacrifice of obedience over the selfishness of convenience, whatever it is you think you're giving up will be greatly overshadowed by what God will bless you with in return. For every bad relationship that you step out of, oh, wait for a good one that God will bless you with. Just consider it. Because every time convenience and obedience, every time you pick convenience over obedience, you avoid bearing the weight. You think about that. Don't tell me putting the ark on that cart wasn't easier. Don't tell me it wasn't easier than throwing it on their shoulders, bearing the weight of it on top of them. And carrying it. It's easier to ignore God because it's more convenient. It's easier, it's less work to just keep doing what you know. It's easier to just sign the papers and get a divorce than to fight for what you chose. It's easier to just give up on your kid than to discipline, to take away things, to harshly and lovingly guide them back. No matter where I was in my life of cussing God or hating God, church was never an option for me. It was a guaranteed. And I hated my parents for it. But I'm so grateful today, because that meant that I never stepped away from a chance to hear God speak. It's worth the extra effort. And here's what I love. You're never too far gone. It's never too late to change your course by changing your choice. It's never too late. The marriage is never too far gone. The relationship with your kid is never too far gone. Your walk with God is never too far gone. Paul wrote and said, "For salvation is closer to you today than it was when you first believed." God is always right there. The Father was standing outside waiting for his son to return home. And he ran out to meet him and embrace him, even though the son had wasted away everything. It is never too late to change your course, but it starts by changing your choice. See, David stopped short. Something happened that caused him to get angry, to doubt. Let me just set you up for the reality of what's going to happen in your life. Something's going to blindside you. Something unexpected and unimaginable is going to rock your boat. Something's going to try to come between you and your spouse. Something's going to try to come between you and your kids. Something's going to try to come between you and your faith. I'm giving you the warning now. Batten down the hatches. Get ready. Don't make the mistake of stopping short. Because when you stop short, you shortchange yourselves and the others around you the blessings God is waiting to give you. David stopping short didn't just affect him. It affected his people. And he was stuck watching God bless others because he chose convenience over obedience. I assure you, you can't afford the cost of convenience. It's not worth it in your marriage. It's not worth it with your kids. Consider any journey, any vacation, any road trip, however painful the part in the car was. Imagine what you would have missed out on if you would have stopped short and turned around. When I was 22 is when I felt God tug my heart towards ministry, towards preaching the gospel. My wife was out of town. My fiance at the time was out of town. And I hated going to church alone. I reluctantly got up that morning, got in the car, and every red light I hit, there was nothing but a desire to turn around and go home. What would I have missed if I'd have stopped short? Where would my family be if I would have stopped short? Listen to me, church. The cost is never worth the choice of convenience. But it's always worth obedience. Because one day, everything you sacrificed, everything you surrendered, will be overshadowed by the blessings God will pour down. That day may not be till heaven, but it is promised it will be here. He said, one day the Son will return and he will pay back everyone based on what they've done. Your marriage is worth it. Your family's worth it. More importantly, the kingdom is worth it. Because who is missing the blessing of salvation because you're choosing convenience over obedience? Because it's not natural for you to go talk to people about Jesus. It's not natural for anybody. Just embrace the awkward, I'm telling you. What's the worst they do? Say no. And it's no different. But someone walked up to you. Someone extended that invitation to you. And because of that, you didn't miss out on the blessing. Someone gave so you could sit here today and not miss out on the blessing. It's not just about us. David wasn't concerned about himself. He was concerned about the people. The cost is never worth the choice of convenience. Church, as we close, I want you to just consider, where is your desire today? When it comes to being in alignment with God, where is your desire? Where have you located the Savior? Is he hidden in the distance? Are you in the middle of fighting to bring him back in front? Is your desire to put him where he rightfully is? If what you're doing got you there, it ain't working. If what you're doing in your finances got you where you are, it's not working. If what you're doing with that substance or that abuse has got you where you are, then it's not working. Change the choice and watch God change your course. Not a people person. I'm an introvert. People scare me, I'll be honest. But what would I miss out on? What would others miss out on if I constantly chose convenience? It's easier to sit down after a long day and just get on my phone and ignore the family around me. But what do my kids miss out on if I'm not willing to just shut it off, get on the floor and play? It's easier to save the money on babysitting. It's easier to save the time from taking my wife out. It's easier not to send the flowers she says she doesn't want, but she does. She's lying. It's easier not to. It's more convenient not to, but it's not worth the cost. I believe in you. Save me. That's all he asks. And then what he opens to you afterwards is unmeasurable. Father, I pray this morning for change in our course. I pray this morning for different choices, choices that save marriages, choices that save families, choices that save finances and put us in a position where we can bless other people. Father, I pray for changed lives, lives that get to that point where it's not about my comfort and convenience, it's about obedience to you and the calling of the kingdom, that I will tell people about you. I will stand up when no one else will stand up. I'm not afraid to be seen as different in my workplace because I won't go there for lunch, because I won't embrace that conversation or that flirtatious relationship, because I will stand with my spouse. Because I care more about where you are in my life than anything else, God. God, speak to us this morning. Save us this morning. Move in us now.